Well, hey, I know 2 weekends ago was Easter, and for some of you here today, that was your very first experience at CCV. And I just want to tell you what an honor it is for us to have you back. Our prayer is that you would be able to find CCV to be a place that you can call home. Some of you on Easter, you were baptized. You took that amazing step of faith, and you heard last weekend that on Easter, 844 people at CCV took a step to become baptized. And that's something to give God a lot of credit for. So amazing to see the life change around here, and we just give God all the credit for that. One of my favorite memories from Easter is I was actually at the baptistry, and I watched a mom and dad baptize their teenage son. They told him they were going to do this ahead of time. I didn't know that. But when they baptized him, they held him under the water for like 4 seconds, and my eyes got wide, and I was like, oh my goodness, I was just picturing in my mind them saying this. This is for everything you've ever done, to, you know, so I was laughing. But it really is truly amazing to see people's lives being transformed right in front of us, and that can never get old around here. It can never get old. Well, our family has a routine every weekend. We try to attend the very same service every weekend. And then when we drive home, we've developed a routine where we will ask our kids kind of the same question every week. And this is basically how it goes. Tell me one thing you learned in your class at church. And sometimes I'll use our CCV mobile app because there's a parent section on there. It gives you the Cliff Notes version of any age group and what they learned. And it kind of spurs some conversation. But what's happened because of that is our kids have started asking us back, well, tell us what you learned. And so last weekend, I was explaining that we kicked off this brand new series on the Ten Commandments called Timeless. And then I asked my kids, how many of the Ten Commandments do you know? And so they began, you know, spitting off the ones they knew, like, you know, don't murder and children obey your parents. And I'm like, that's a good one, you know, and they're going on. And then I filled in the rest for them. So we kind of got all 10. But then I asked them something I'd seen before. I asked them this question. Which one of the Ten Commandments do you think you've absolutely not broken? So one of them piped up and said, well, I've never murdered anybody. I said, well, that's good. We talked about that a little bit more. We'll talk about that in a few weeks. But then my middle daughter said this, Daddy, I've never created an idol. And then my youngest child goes, me neither. You know, she wanted to make sure she's included. And I sat there and I just thought this, I wonder how many of us in America would ever like say like that we struggle with the second commandment, which is basically this, don't commit idolatry. Don't have an image that you place in front of God. Now, sure, if we lived in a third world country, you know, you travel around the world, India, you know, parts of China and Africa, there would be people that would have to raise their hand and go, this is an issue for me. You know, last week I chopped off the head of a chicken, I poured some blood out to this Hindu god, like I did it, you know. And so, you know, we realize that. But in a first world country like America, I mean, that's not even culturally acceptable for us. So at some point, you start to ask yourself, is this command even relevant for us anymore? And that question doesn't take away from the relevance of why God gave it 3,000 years ago to the Israelites. I mean, if you know anything about Old Testament history, you'll find this out, that when God gave this command, it was sandwiched in between the Israelites leaving Egypt and traveling to the land of Canaan, which was the promised land. Now, here's what we know from history. Egypt was an idol factory. I mean, you just type into Google, Egyptian gods, idols, there will be so many things that pop up. I mean, the sun god Ra, and they had gods for fertility and farming and sex. I mean, you name it. And then we know when the Israelites entered Canaan, at that time, they had more idols than any other place on earth at that time. As a matter of fact, my favorite museum in the world is in Israel. It's called the Israel Museum. And they actually have idols that the Canaanites worshipped from this time period. It's actually amazing. They have actual idols from thousands and thousands of years ago that they've dug up. I want to show you a couple of my personal pictures. Here's some idols, okay? This is actually the idol Baal. If you ever read the Old Testament and you see the word, they worshiped the idol Baal. Baal was a god of power and prestige and kind of reign and prosperity, and he was often depicted as a bull. So these are actual, like, idols of Baal. They also had an idol to the goddess Ashtoreth. Okay, Ashtoreth was actually a goddess, and she was the goddess of sex and fertility. And so these are also pictures of her. And so she was oftentimes depicted. Certain features were prominent with her because she was the god of sex. And so we'll move on. I think that's obvious. So we'll move past that picture. Then there was the god Molech. And this, there were idols everywhere from Molech. And Molech, it was so sad. But you see this in the Old Testament. People actually sacrificed their kids to the god Molech in this idol. And there was fire. And they actually burned their children to death to this god. So obviously, you know, 3,000 years ago, I mean, it's like they needed this commandment. And we could even make an argument that in Jesus' day, they needed it as well. Jesus grew up in a Greco-Roman society. If you went to any Roman city, I'm telling you, any Roman city at that time in the world, you would have seen shrines set up outside of their houses or at the front of their houses to different gods. I mean, tons of them. You would have seen shrines to maybe Zeus, the god of power. You would have seen shrines to Aphrodite, who is the goddess of beauty and love, or Artemis, the goddess of sex and fertility. In Ephesus, there was a temple set up to Artemis that you could go. It was one of the seven wonders of the world, and you could actually buy an idol there at that temple and take it home with you for sex and fertility. Or maybe it was the god Mammon, the god of wealth. So they needed it as well. I mean, there were idols everywhere. But I, for one, am just so glad that we live in America, an enlightened, educated society, where there's no way anybody would worship an idol to power, beauty, sex, or wealth. I mean, who would do that? You're not buying it, are you? We know better. Listen, the images have changed, but the issues are exactly the same. Which, by the way, makes it more dangerous for us. And here's why. Because the images aren't as obvious now anymore. Here's what you should write down. I saw this. This is an amazing quote. The deadliest war you'll ever fight is the one you never realize is going on. And for many of us, there's this war of idolatry in our lives that we don't even see. I mean, maybe the images for you would be something like this. Maybe the image is the corner office and what that represents in your life. Maybe the image is the gym and your body. Maybe the image is your home and you're just so wrapped up in your home and making it look beautiful and awesome. Maybe the image is a sport. It's the NFL. I mean, go with me on this. Transport someone 3,000 years ago, a Hebrew, and just implant them into our day and age today and take them to an NFL game. Well, how would they describe it? They might describe it this way. It was weird. Before the game, they sacrificed these pigs over fire. And then they painted what looked like blood on their faces and walked into a stadium and just did a bunch of chants. So I don't know what was going on the field. People were like beating each other up. I don't know what. I mean, I don't know how they describe it, but maybe this is your idol. I don't know. Maybe it's your phone. Maybe it's technology. And this is for a lot of us. We get wrapped up in this. Maybe it's what you look at every day in the mirror. It's your image. Some of us had an idol that popped up years ago around Christmas. Okay, you would have sacrificed the family pet to get one of these. You would have knocked people over at least. Do you remember this? Do you remember Tickle Me Elmo? Look, we don't bow down to the goddess Aphrodite today. But isn't it true that so many young women give in to depression and eating disorders because they bow down to body image? Look, we don't burn incense to the god Mammon, but don't so many of us get wrapped up in what we think that money can bring us or what it could give us? I mean, I don't know any parents today that have literally sacrificed their child to the god Molech in fire. But don't some of us as parents, haven't we sacrificed our kids to the idol of work, of prestige, to the next promotion? Let me just read for you the second commandment. It's found in Exodus chapter 20. This is one of the places. In verse 4 says this. God says this to the Israelites. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above, in earth beneath, or the waters below. God's like, I'm going to cover everything. You cannot have an image for anything. And this commandment may be more relevant today than in any other time in history. Maybe that's why it was one of the longest commandments. See, some of the commandments, God just said, don't murder, period. Not this one. He gives a ton of detail. He goes on in verse 5 and says this, you shall not bow down to them or worship them. Now, we sometimes gloss over this, but the term bow down literally means that you're bowing down in front of something. In other words, you're saying, I think something or someone can give me what only God can. Worship is the idea that you place your worth, you place your value in something other than God. Have you ever placed your worth or value in something other than God? I have. I mean, we all have. This is a relevant command for us today. What if I told you every struggle in your life today, anything you walked in with today, every sin, every fear, every disappointment, even your lack of purpose that you feel right now, what if I told you the root cause is always, always idolatry? Would you believe me? Here's what I'm going to try to give you as a big idea today that you have to let sink in at some point in your being. Here it is. Idolatry is not an issue. It's not like one of the sins. Idolatry is the issue. Idolatry is the root of every sin in your life. Martin Luther put it this way. He said, you cannot violate the other 9 commandments without breaking this one first. Isn't that amazing? You can't. This is the root. Kyle Idleman, an author and pastor, said this, idolatry isn't just one of the many sins. Rather, it's the one great sin that all others come from. All others come from this. Here's why idolatry is the root. It's the root of so many of the issues that we deal with in life. See, God designed you, he created you as your creator to have him as first place, to put him as number one. Idolatry is basically when we take God off his throne and we put something in his place. Now, the issue is God said, if you ever put something in my place, your life is going to break down. It's not going to operate the way I designed it to be run. Now, does God have the ability of telling us that our life is going to break down if we don't put him as first? Of course he does. I mean, think about the creator of an automobile. Right? The creator of an automobile has the right to say, this automobile only runs off gasoline. Now, you could be like, well, you're stupid. You know what I'm going to do? You're dumb. I'm going to fill this automobile. You know what I think should work? A mixture of Red Bull and corn syrup. I'm just going to pour those together. I'm going to pour it in. That should work. What's going to happen to your car? It'll break down every single time. Do you have the right to get upset at the creator because you're running it off in against his instructions for your life? Well, no. But that's where some of us are with God. It's like our life keeps breaking down and we're not sure why. The issue is you've taken God off his throne and you've put something in its place. Here's how I wrote it in your notes. You only get God's best when you make him your first. Can I repeat that? You only get God's best. Your life only operates and runs the way God always intended it to be when you put God first. Now listen, God doesn't ask to be first because he's insecure, he's arrogant, or for any other reason. Do you understand that God has to have first place in your life? He will not accept second. He can't accept second. It would go against his very nature and the way he designed you. But it's not because he's insecure, arrogant, or some killjoy. I wrote in my notes this way. God doesn't want to be the manager of your team. He owns the team. God doesn't want to be the chairman of your board. He is the board. Here's how God puts it going on in verse 5. He gives us lots of detail. He says, for I, the Lord, your God, I'm a jealous God. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God, now you're saying you're jealous? See, jealousy has a bad rap in our society, right, in our world. When we think of jealousy, we think of 2 junior high girls, right? We think of an over-possessive boyfriend. We think of the friend on social media that every single time you post a picture that doesn't have them in it with other friends, they get jealous. Is that the picture of God? No. Isn't there a righteous, holy kind of jealousy? Let me give you an example. Let's say this week you walked into a restaurant and there you saw me sitting down at a table across from another woman, not my wife. And there I was. We were holding hands across the table. We were looking into each other's eyes, smiling. And you're like, whoa. So you walk up to the table and you say, what are you doing? I'm like, what's it look like? I'm on a date. You're like, what about your wife? Well, I love her. I mean, of course I love Jamie, but I dated her on Sunday. What are you going to feel in that moment? You're going to feel anger. You're going to feel disappointment. You are jealous for my marriage. Now, what if Jamie walked in the restaurant? She walked up to the table. She's all smiling. She's like, hey, how's the date going, you two? Do you think that's what my wife would say? I'd be picking myself up off the floor, probably on my way to like a local hospital somewhere, you know? Of course. Why? Because Jamie is jealous for our marriage. There's a pure form of jealousy, and it's always based on love. And Jamie wouldn't be jealous just because of herself. She'd be jealous because she wants what's best for us, for me, for our kids. This is so significant. You have to let this sink in. Do you understand that God's jealousy for you proves his desperate and deep love for you? Do you understand that? A God who is not jealous for you would be as incompatible and as unthinkable as a husband or a wife who didn't care if their spouse was faithful to them. This proves God's love for us. God goes on in verse 5 and he tells us what's at stake with idolatry. This is pretty deep. Listen, he goes, hey, don't have idols, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. Now, this word hate just means when you decrease someone in value, you put something else ahead of them. Now, this verse has been so misunderstood. Well, what does that mean? I talked to a mom 3 weeks ago who wanted to baptize her infant baby. It was only a few weeks old. She wanted to baptize him. I said, well, tell me why you want to do that. She said, well, remember that verse that says the sins passed down from generation to generation? She began to explain her parents and some sin they had in their life, and it was pretty dark and deep. And she said, remember, that's passed down my baby. Is that how it works? Let me explain this verse to you. This Hebrew word for punish means to visit. Notice the word God did not use. He did not use the word to inhabit. Here's what God is not saying. You are not, sin does not pass from someone else and inhabit you. That's not how it works. You might say, well, okay, how does a sin visit generations? It's not as complex as we've made it out to be. Do you understand when this was written at that time in history in Israel, it was not uncommon for 3 to 4 generations to live under one roof. Now, how might this play out in our modern day and age? Well, think about it this way. All my grandparents have passed away. My wife, Jamie, her grandpa's still alive. So most holidays, when we get together, here's who's in a room. Jamie's grandpa, Jamie's parents, Jamie and me, and our kids. How many generations is that? It's not a trick question at all. It's 4 generations. Now, this is just for illustrative purposes. This is not true at all. Do not walk up to him and say this. He is a godly man. But let's, for illustration purposes, let's just say that Jamie's grandpa, his idol was drugs. He was a drug addict. He was a druggie. He turned to drugs at some point in his life for his joy instead of God. Do you understand? Every single time our family got together, that sin would visit 4 generations. I mean, I'd have to explain to my kids. They'd be like, Dad, what is going on with Grandpa? Well, kids, Grandpa's stoned, okay? Grandpa had a bottle or a bong. I wasn't sure what it was, but he had something, okay? Do you understand? Do you understand? This is where some of you are. There's been some sort of sin that's lingered in your family history for generations, and every single time you get together, you are reminded it is visiting your family. It could be the sin of abuse or neglect. It could be the sin of some sort of anger. It could be the sin of sexual sin or sexual abuse, and it visits you. As a matter of fact, it may be affecting you right now. You may find yourself falling into some of the same patterns that you saw. Do you see what's at stake? If that's you here today, listen to me very carefully. God wants to tell you it needs to end with your generation. Can I repeat that? This sin, this idolatry needs to end with you. Because if it doesn't, it will pass down to your kids and your grandkids and on and on it goes. Does anybody want to end a generational sin that has visited your family? Then God goes on in verse 6, and he tells us what we can expect if it does. This is amazing. You should go look up Exodus 20, verse 6 sometimes. It ends the command. He says, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commands. This is the largest numerical contrast in the Bible. A sin can affect 3 or 4 generations. If you break it and you follow God's commands, you put him first, it can affect 1,000 generations. Is that not amazing? But God just wants us to understand what's at stake. So if that's what's at stake, what do you do? Well, the very first thing you have to do, and what I want to spend a little time on today, is you have to identify any idol that you've put in your life. You have to identify. And I'm going to help us do that. I want to dig a little deep on that. Here's why we have to dig a little deep. And some of these are going to cut. The reason that's the case, I wrote this in your notes, is idols can be tricky. They're so tricky, they're so deceivous, because they're normally good things we put in God's place. Now, we always think idols are bad. They're going to be obvious. Not true. Idols can be very good things that we've just put in God's place. Let me give you an example. If you're a parent, do you think your kids are bad? Maybe that's a bad example. Yeah, so you're like, yes, I do. I do. Okay, how about this? Do you think beauty's bad? Do you think money's bad? Do you think success is bad? Well, no, but they could be. But here's the reality. Listen, anything can become an idol if it becomes a priority over or a substitute for God. So what could that be? I mean, let me just tease this out for you a little bit, because you got to figure this out in your own life. Your idol could be family. It could be kids. It could be career. It could be making money, achievement, saving face, social standing, number of social media followers. It could be a romantic relationship. It could be the idea of marriage. It could be your marriage. It could be peer approval, competence, your education, how smart you are. It could be beauty, your body. Are any of those things bad? No, but they could be. So how do you discern what an idol is in your life if it's so tricky and so hard to see? I'm going to give you 5 questions today. If you would simply pick one of these. I'm just asking you to pick one. Here's 5 questions. Okay, we'll start out with some low-hanging fruit. Here's question one. Blank keeps me from being involved in church most often. What is it for you? What keeps you away from being involved in what you know is good in your life and keeps God first? Church, the body of Christ. For some of you, it's club sports, which means it might be a child. It might go deeper than that. It might be your self-image because of what your child projects on you because you think they're amazing. You want them to be amazing. You want them to be the next Steph Curry. I mean, think about what you're saying every single time you miss church because of a sporting event. You're communicating to your children that this is more important than God. Do you understand the generational impact of that for generations? This could be a hobby for you. It could be a sport. It could be sleep. What is it? You just have to name it. Until you name your idol, you'll never know what it is. Hey, here's question number 2. My internet search history reveals I look at blank most often. Would you have the courage to go pull up your internet search history if you haven't deleted it already? Now, every year, Google releases the top searches for every year. So here's the top searches for 2016. Here's 3 of them. It starts with porn. Porn's always at the top. Something pornographic. The second one is actually Powerball. It's amazing. Go look it up for yourself. Powerball was one of the number one searches on Google last year. The third one might surprise you, might not. Here's the Trump and Hillary. Now, let's just say you pulled this up and one of these or something else was on your list. What might it reveal to you about what your idol is? Well, if yours was porn, maybe your idol's pleasure. You've told God, I don't believe that what you said, that true sexual pleasure only really takes place in the context of marriage between 2 spouses. You say, God, I got to add something in because that's not doing it for me. And if you've ever gone down the path of pornography, you know it is a deep, dark pit. This does not lead to this. It's momentary, and then it is dark. Idols always lie. Do not miss this. They always lie. If yours was Powerball, it might reveal to you that your idol's security. You think if you won Powerball, you'd be secure for the rest of your life. Nothing could be further from the truth. Go ask any Powerball winner 5 years down the road. It's not true. Idols lie. Now, this one's trickier. Because if this was you, if you searched like crazy for political systems or a candidate or whatever else, you got to dig deep here. Because this idol pops up every single time we have an election year. Your idol might be that you think a political person could fix America. No political person will ever fix our nation, ever. There's one person that can fix our nation, and that is God. Period. That's it. Well, listen, I know you're clapping, but hey, some of you, you bought into this lie more than you want to admit. You think there's a person or a political figure that could fix our country. It's not true. Let's move on. Number three, now listen, this is the one that almost all of you will not have the courage to ask. Only the top 1% of you will be bold enough to answer this question. I dare you to answer this question. If you do, I'd love to hear from you. Excluding my mortgage, I spend more on blank than anything else. Do you have the guts to pull up your last bank statement and just add it up? I mean, take away your mortgage, take away your big bills, and just add up and say, God, how much have I spent on your kingdom, you as first, versus how much have I spent on like me and my personal desires? That's getting a little deep, isn't it? But this would be the easiest way to identify an idol in your life. You know why? Jesus made it so clear in Matthew 6:21. He said, wherever your money goes, your heart, in other words, your worship, goes with it. That's what he said. That's Jesus' words. So you want to know your idol? Follow the money trail. Let's move on. The emotion I have trouble controlling the most is blank. What emotion do you have most difficulty controlling in your life? This reveals so much about what might be an idol. For example, let's say yours was anger. If it was anger, what would that reveal in your life? Maybe it would reveal this. You'd say, am I angry about something that is so important to me, it's gone above God? You need to ask the same question about guilt or fear or despair. For example, if you're scared about something, if something worries you so much, you need to ask, have I put this above God? Oftentimes the answer is yes, and that's why you're so concerned, because you're relying on that instead of relying on God. Let's end on an easy note, okay? Here's the last question. If I only had blank, I would have happiness, peace, and contentment. Do you know what this is for so many of you men? Because I talk to so many men, and this is what it is. It's a number in your retirement account. You have a magic number that if you just had that, your life would be secure, and you think you'd have happiness for the rest of it. Only God can give you happiness, joy, and peace, and contentment in life, not a number. For some of you, this is a hobby. For some of you, it's a person's name that you would have to be honest and fill in. It's a romantic relationship. I'm just asking you to take one of those questions and answer it, because if you do, you would be able to identify and name your idol. Some of you will have a hard time answering these questions. So can I give you the easiest way to find out what your idol is? Ask the person that knows you best. Ask your wife if you're married, or your spouse. Ask a roommate if you have a roommate. Do you want an A+ on this assignment? Ask your kids. I wrote that down as I was writing this message. I put my notes down. I picked up my cell phone and I called my teenage daughter. And I said, this is what Daddy's preaching on. I just want you to be completely honest with Daddy. Is there anything that Daddy has put above you, above Mom, that you think I put above God? And she began to speak into my life, and it cut deep. Do you understand? Your kids are 10 times more observant than you would ever give them credit for. I dare you to ask your kids. Once you've identified an idol, then what do you do? What do you do next? Here's the easy answer most people would tell you. Just remove it. Just remove it. That's the easy answer. I mean, don't be dumb. Just get rid of it. Here's why that's not always the easiest answer. For some of you, it is. Some of you have a relationship right now. You're dating someone. You know you need to remove it. It's just, do you have the courage to do it? But remember, idols are often good things we put in God's place. What if your idol is your kids? I mean, do you go home and get the kids together and go, this is going to be tough, but I bought you a plane ticket to a boarding school in Bulgaria, so good luck, you know? What do you do? I mean, if your idol's your job, do you throw, I mean, some of you need to change professions. What if your idol's your iPhone? Do you toss it away? What if your idol's a hobby? I had a friend of mine, he was telling me a story, he heard a message on idols, and he actually went and took his golf clubs, and he felt like he was playing too much golf, and he threw them in the church's trash can. I'm playing with those clubs today. They are amazing. I mean, they are like, I'm loving them. You know, they're, I'm joking. Don't email, I'm not, that's not true. I'm not playing with these clubs. But see, here's the deal with an idol. I mean, the problem with just removing, listen carefully. The issue is you've taken God off his throne and you've put something in its place. If you just remove that idol off the throne, do you understand at some point, if you just remove it, something else is going to show up, likely the same idol? It's like going to the dentist. If you went to the dentist and you had a cavity and he drilled it out and he said, I got to drill out the cavity first, and he drilled it out and then you said, stop. That's all I want done. What would happen to that cavity? It would come right back. And that's where some of you are. It's like you've tried to remove that idol in your life. You've removed that bad guy. Another one showed up. You removed that girl. Another girl that's not good for your life showed up again. You're like, what's happening? You missed it. You missed the most important step. See, if you show up to your lake and there's trash in your lake and you pick up the trash every day and then you show up the next day and there's trash again and the next day you clean it up and there's trash again, at some point you realize the issue is not the trash in the lake. The issue is way upstream somewhere. What's the issue? The issue is you have not replaced that idol with what needs to be in its place. Here's how I wrote it in your notes. If you uproot an idol and fail to plant Jesus in its place, the idol will always grow back. That's an aha moment for some of you. So what do you do with an idol? Here's three steps. Number one, you have to identify it. You gotta identify it. You have to remove it. You have to pull back on whatever it is, and then you gotta replace. And do not forget this. What do you replace your idol with? With God. With Jesus, because that's who needs to be back on the throne. Some of you, this is like, man, you've tried to remove pornography for so long, but it keeps coming back because you've not replaced that energy and that time with something of more of God in your life. Or maybe it's shopping or debt, and you're just in this, and you realize it. So what's the takeaway today? Here's the takeaway. Ask the question, fill the gap. Ask the question and fill the gap. What's the question? God, what is the number one competitor that I have in my life to you right now? What have I taken you off the throne and put something in your place? What is it? Just answer the question. But once you pull back on that, and once you say, I'm going to pull back on this, God, if you don't fill the gap with Jesus, it's a losing war. How do you fill the gap in your life with more of God? Very simply, you answer this question. My next step with God is what? See, if you've been around CCV for any amount of time, we talk about next steps. We list next steps for you. And the steps in and of themselves are not the answer. But every single time we feel like you take a step towards God, God fills the gaps in your life. He draws you closer to him. That's why for some of you, you know, like what would be your answer to your next step? Your answer would be this. You know, for some of you that you come to church literally once a month, once every 6 weeks. You know that. You just have to get honest with yourself. And your next step is you need to be here every single week to make sure God is the priority in your life, to reorient you. For some of you, your next step is you've been coming, but you've never taken a step to be baptized. And you need to take a step to be baptized to invite and proclaim that, God, I'm making you the Lord of my life, and you can fill the gap in me that I've been filling with all this other stuff. For some of you, Your answer is that you need to get into a neighborhood group. Here's why. Because there is a gap in your life where there are not other godly men and women that are surrounding you. You don't have that during the week. And you think you can just show up to church and go home and be good. It doesn't work that way. Life change happens in the context of community, always. For some of you, your next step is to start serving. You know why? Because you feel a lack of purpose in your life. The secret of serving is that it gives you purpose because you're giving your life away, which is God always intended, to something that matters, something that's eternal, not something that's just here for a moment and gone tomorrow. For some of you, your next step is to give. And you've been fighting it because you think it's a ploy or something else by the church. But listen, when you give your resources to God's kingdom, it is such a quick on-ramp to aligning your heart more with God. That's just how it always works. It's like that with other areas of your life too. But you just have to answer the question, what is your next step? Because if you would take a step towards God as you try to remove idols and you put God back on his throne, that's when life operates the way it always should. Years ago, Michael Jordan wrote a book and he told a story about going over to his friend's house. They were going to go out to dinner that night, and it was really cold outside in Chicago, so he needed a jacket. He forgot his jacket, so he said, can I borrow a jacket? So his friend sent him to his room and said, hey, just walk in my closet, pick any jacket you want. Michael Jordan comes out, not with a jacket, but with a whole bundle of clothes in his arms. He throws the clothes on the ground, and he walks in the kitchen, grabs a butcher knife, and begins to cut them up into little pieces. His friend's like, he noticed, his friend, that every article of clothing was a competitor to Nike. Michael Jordan picks up his phone, calls his agent, and says, I need you to replace every single item of clothing I just tore up with a proper brand. He gets off the phone, and he looks at his friend, and he says these words, don't let me ever see you in anything other than Nike again. You cannot ride the fence with me. Now, that's an extreme example with clothes. But for some of us, with the God of the universe and him needing to be first in our life, it's time for you to stop riding the fence. You've been riding the fence, one foot in, one foot out for a long, long time, and you know there's something that you've placed above God. And it's time for you to remove and replace. So the question is, what's your next step? I pray you have the courage to take it. Let me pray for you. Father, thank you for a topic that's so relevant today as it was 3,000 years ago. God, that we have a tendency to produce idols. Our hearts are idol factories. And we produce things in our lives that we put on your throne. And God, we need to take those and remove them. But most importantly, God, we need to replace them with you, with more of you. And I pray that you give every single one of us today the courage to identify our idol, to remove it, but most importantly, to replace it. Help us to take a step. Whatever our next step is, help us to take it. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.